Welcome back to the Anal Podcast. This is our 41st Anal Probe segment. As always, we'll be breaking down what's going on in the world around us, as well as what the hottest news of the day is. This week, we will have returning special guest Jacob Leham from Jacob's Bipolar Adventures. Make sure you find him on anchor.fm. And don't forget about the regular returning reoccurring cast. As always, put on your thinking caps, sit back and relax, and enjoy this episode of the Anal Pod. Welcome back to the Anal Podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Jacob, Katie, John, Jared, and that pesky violent giraffe keeps sticking his head in here. Why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Okay, well, hello, I'm Jacob. Also from Jacob's Bipolar Adventures.
Okay. Hi, I'm John, and I'm a very tired boy.
I'm Jared. Samesies as John.
What'd you boys get into last night? Oh, wait, violent giraffe?
Hello, I'm the violent giraffe, and I'm always sticking my head where it doesn't belong. Thank you, Rob.
And I'm your host, Rob. I'd like to welcome you to the Anal Podcast. And we're going to get started with some local news. Local crazy person, Mike Kelly, has been sending out emails. And I would really like to hear what that email says. And rumor has it, Jared got one.
Yeah, I guess at some point I got on his mailing list.
Let's hear what he has to say.
So, dear neighbor...
Well, he's our congressman for listeners.
Let's proceed with he's a congressman.
Yeah, okay.
dear neighbor, the coronavirus pandemic brought parents into their children's online classrooms last year, and many did not like what they saw. And this next sentence is bold. We now know that children across the nation are being indoctrinated with a Marxist ideology called critical race theory, CRT for short. And that links to a New York Post article that's just amazing. I could read a little bit of that if anyone wants.
I don't know if we need to give the New York Post any traction at all.
But oh God, it's bad. Anyway. A dogma that preaches American society is defined only by racism, and that we as individuals are either oppressors or oppressed based solely on the color of our skin. This is a false destructive narrative that is being used to divide us and undermine our institutions. We know that the United States is a fundamentally good nation that was the first in human history to articulate that all human beings are equal and then to strive to live up to that ideal. Sorry, I'm just...
I mean, you got to finish, but there is so much to unpack here. Holy cow.
So, okay, and then the next sentence is also bolded. By adhering to our founding principles, we ended slavery. We ended Jim Crow. And worked to realize Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream that people would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. But proponents of CRT reject our Declaration of Independence, equality under the law, and King's dream, and then blah, blah, blah bills he co-sponsored to fight against CRT.
But we've named the enemy, and the enemy is CRT.
Well, I mean... The people in charge's enemy is CRT, definitely, but they're making it our enemy, too. We're trying to convince us that it's our enemy.
Wait, I thought our enemy was hedge funds. Wait, we'll get into that later.
No one wants to get into that later. So yeah, I did a lot of research into critical race theory this week, and oddly enough, a friend of mine forwarded this email to me, and Jared got it, and I also got the email. It just goes to my spam folder, strangely enough, from Mike Kelly, our Congress golem. And you'll never guess what side of the aisle he's on. He's a Republican. And yeah, I talked to some of my friends that are high school teachers. None of them had any idea what it even was. So it's just flatly not being taught in schools. Like, it's being taught in... Or it's not being taught in high schools and elementary schools. It's a college level curriculum. The only place this is appearing, I think, is in law schools, which if we don't want lawyers learning our entire history, then that's horrifying.
Oh yeah, then we're way worse than I thought.
Yeah. So I think maybe first we need to like get into what critical race theory actually is.
To me, it just sounds like a new name for, but it's a villain. It's just a name they picked out for a villain. And right now there's social unrest because people of color are still not treated equal in the country after what, 400 years? I think it was 400.
Yeah. Well, it's less about like current event, I think, and more about, you know, how previous actual history has informed and molded our present. And what ignoring parts of that also does. So my best way to describe critical race theory is to give you an example, and I have two pretty good ones.
Example A, lay it on.
Example A is, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. So we all learn that he freed the slaves. He's the great emancipator, you know, ignoring that he didn't free all of the slaves. We also never learned the reason why. The reason why Abraham Lincoln wanted to free the slaves, because he wanted to send them back to Africa, because he didn't want the races to mix. Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves because he was very racist. And that's what critical race theory would teach. Rather than the very basic Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, it would teach the whole story of that. And you kind of start to see how that informs the future policy and et cetera differently. Another example would be contained in this Mike Kelly email about Martin Luther King. He says he worked to realize Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream, but forgets that Martin Luther King famously said, well, not as famously as it should be, but famously said, a riot is the language of the unheard. He wasn't always, you know, about peaceful protest. People want us to forget that. And, you know, we also don't learn in school that the CIA killed him.
Yeah, they keep that right off the books.
Right. And I had another example, but I don't remember it right now. Actually, I guess I had three. It's the GI Bill. You know, Americans are kind of familiar with the GI Bill, where when soldiers came back, they were given, you know, an acre and a mule. You know, high school or college education or property. Is that what it was?
But I thought it was just education. But
I thought it was just education.
Well, it was education or money for housing, because the only reason I'm aware of this now is that, you know, all of the soldiers got this, including the black soldiers, but black people weren't allowed to go to schools and weren't allowed to live in houses. So it didn't really help them at all. We don't learn that in high school. I didn't even learn that in college. And I took a lot of history classes in college.
Well, and even further with that, John, like, wasn't the GI Bill in after World War II, wasn't that one of the main pushes, people from pushing, like, the more middle-class white people out of the cities into suburbs, you know, and thereby, like, racially dividing the country even more and kind of creating these areas of poverty in these inner cities because those people just left. And then the only people left were like the, you know, the poor people that couldn't afford to move out that, you know, yeah. Coincidentally, for some reason, those people tend to not be white for some reason in this country.
But we really love blanket statements where we say, no, we gave the GI Bill to everybody and it's fine and we did the right thing. But like, it's no good if you can't use it and you weren't just given the money instead of the money for the education. Like, you took the education or you got nothing.
It gave enormous opportunity to them because the GI Bill did give either education or it gave, I think, a certain amount of money payout, like up to like $35,000 or something. So you could buy a house, buy a car, whatever. Right. So you could, start to live your life after the war, or you could reserve it and you could actually use it to pay for the college expenses of your child. So it would set you up, or it would set up baby boomer.
Oh, sure.
Risk your life to have a taste of generational wealth.
Sure. And then we're still, all of these things, people of color couldn't take advantage of.
Yeah, exactly. So they went to college for free, and they criticize us for asking for free college at public universities. But they went to college for free.
Yeah. Another good kind of offshoot of this discussion.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to critical race theory. You know, I don't really see the harm in teaching history that actually happened to anyone, really. I don't know how all of these things teach people that they are inherently racist or oppressors. I think it could teach people that they've benefited from a racist system. And that's literally what the tenets of cognitive or critical race theory say. Like, I've gone as far as actually reading excerpts from it. It just seeks to inform people that, like, the world is different than you think it is, man.
Well, yeah, everybody lies about everything all the time. So everything you think is real probably isn't. So yeah.
It's a half truth or a quarter truth. But, you know, there's way more to the story than a white man tells you.
Speaking of that, Rob, I think that's a great segue to, do you want to know what people like Mike Kelly are saying what critical race theory actually is?
Oh, Jesus. Yes. Let's hear it.
Boy, do we.
So I was just skimming this article, right? And of course, it's a Marxist thing, because anything that the right doesn't like is, of course, Marxist.
Or globalist.
Right. So, you know, one thing there, I mean, he's referencing Ibram X. Kendi, he's an anti-racist, is what he likes to kind of push. And
that, I don't know what that means.
Well, he says you can't just be not racist. You have to be anti-racist and, like, work to end racism. It's sort of his shtick. I don't know that much about Kendi. I haven't read his book. But anyway, there's a quote from him, and it says, in order to truly be anti-racist, you also have to truly be anti-capitalist. And
is that because capitalism depends on slavery?
Yeah, basically. Okay.
It seeks to exploit the most easily exploitable. And as we've set it up, that's, you know, just poor people. And as we've set that up, that's just people of color. So continue.
And so then, I guess this author gives examples then later of critical race theory in action in the government. Now, remember the examples that John was giving about what actually critical race theory is, and here's what that the right is pushing what critical race theory is. So I'll just read this little paragraph here of examples. The FBI was holding workshops on intersectionality theory. The Department of Homeland Security was telling white employees that they were committing, quote, micro inequities and had been, quote, socialized into oppressor roles. The Treasury Department held a training session telling staff members that, quote, virtually all white people contribute to racism, and they must convert, quote, everyone in the federal government to the ideology of anti-racism. And the Sandia National Laboratories, which design America's nuclear arsenal, sent white male executives to a 3-day re-education camp where they were told that, quote, white male culture was analogous to the KKK, white supremacists, and mass killings. The executives were then forced to renounce their white male privilege and to write letters of apology to fictitious women and people of color. And then he also gave some examples in, like, schools where children had to basically rate how much of an oppressor or how oppressed they were or something, and things like that.
Well, I do not know very much about critical race theory, but I do tend to tune into people who are testifying, and I know that General Milley testified today, and I picked out a few of his quotes that I thought were pretty important. One of which he says, I want to understand white rage, and I am white.
What is that?
I mean, white male rage, that's when they go and shoot everybody. So.
I mean, that's what the army specializes
in,
right?
Is that specifically reserved for whites? Like, is this just something white people do?
He was saying it in the context of the January 6th, attack. So he wanted to understand the white male rage that led to flooding the Capitol and trying to take it by storm. But at the same time, I, like, see your point where it's like, you should kind of understand. Like, it should just kind of click for you. Because, I don't know, you're a white male, so it should kind of make sense primally.
He did go further to say, what is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? What caused that? I want to find that out. I want to maintain an open mind here, and I do want to understand that. He said that it's important for those in uniform to be open-minded and widely read, and the United States Military Academy is a university. So, but Jared, I thought that you might appreciate the fact that he says, I've read Mao Zedong, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me communist. So what is wrong with some situational understanding of the country for which we are personally here to defend? Any thoughts?
Who's saying this? And is
General
it the person
Milley.
doesn't understand white male rage.
Yes. Yes, this is all General Milley, which, remember, he's the one that Trump drug out the day they gassed the protesters, and he went out and held a Bible upside down. He was the one that came out and was like, that should never happen. If I knew what he was doing, it would have never happened. The military should not have been there. That General Milley.
Well, I mean...
It's also the same guy that doesn't understand that, like, every school shooting has just been a white guy. Like,
is that true? There has never been an African-American school shooting?
I think the numbers are very disproportionately white. Male students or former students that do the school shootings. I don't know. Look them all up. I bet it's a white guy. Like, I'll bet you all of my money right now that there are way more white guys doing it in America.
I mean, we're smart, and there are other smart people who have had to have already looked into this. So I'm literally just going to Google school shootings, white versus black. Let's see what the Googles.
That's a good thing to Google.
Yeah. Don't look at the New York Post write up on it.
It's a Statistica. According to Statistica, number of mass shootings in the United States between 1982 and 2021 by shooters, race, or ethnicity. White, 66. Black, 21. Latino, 10. Asian, 8. Other, 5. Native American, 3. 11 unknown slash unclear.
So, I mean, that's all mass shootings. I was speaking more specifically school shootings, but both statistics will bear out.
Are you giving percentages?
No, that is literally the number of
the shootings. Numbers.
Feels like the numbers aren't high enough.
What was that? That was the percentage of who the perpetrator is.
It's the number of incidences is the number. So it's literally 66 incidences between 82 and 2021 of whites, 21 incidences of black, 10 of Latino, 8 Asian, 5 other, 3 Native Americans, 11 unknown, unclear. I'm going to see if I can find more specifically school, but it looks like they're just sort of clumping mass violence, mass shootings kind of all together.
The number of everyone else doing them equal the number of white people doing them, or is the white people more?
Actually, they kind of balance. They kind of balance all of them versus all of us. Jesus, that sounds really bad.
That was so.
Yeah, that was not a good.
Oh, man.
I'm an editing genius. It's fine.
So anyway, yeah, white male rage is just what happened. Like, that's, I don't know if that's the proper terminology for it, but like, I don't know that there are many white women committing mass shootings and such.
Now, have there been any female?
Isn't white really. Male rage kind of a way of window dressing this? Like we're going away from insurrectionists, and we're going away from white terrorists or domestic terrorists, and now we're going to white rage, white male rage. That's what we're settling with now. Where every time it goes a little bit lower.
Well, that does interestingly sound like a mental health condition, which should probably be treated as such, as opposed to an insurrectionist, which does not sound like a mental health issue.
Right, it's like they just needed more. They just needed mental health counseling. They just needed to go to anger management. And no, we don't need to seriously cap what's really at the heart of these people's minds.
What is at the heart of the minds?
I don't even know anymore. I don't think they have hearts.
Wouldn't mental health care help a lot of it?
Yes,
I think standing on solid ground
with all, you know, encompassing healthcare help a lot of this?
I think so. It's there's like a stigma in those communities, and there's a lack of that healthcare as well in those communities, where the people who literally believe that Trump is still president, you know, they don't have access to psychiatric care in a lot of cases. And there's also a stigma among them where if they wanted to seek it out in a nearby city where there might be psychiatric care, people back at their home will just think that they are crazy and might not accept them the same way. And so they decide, I'm just going to stick with everybody else and say he's president.
Well, why? But they don't think they're wrong, though. Like, so why would they seek care if they don't think they're wrong?
Maybe there's somebody who says one thing and won't go by the other thing, you know? They're just closeted and scared for their life if they ever even crack the door.
I totally know what that feels like.
Well, I mean, I think going with the whole white male rage avenue is more of it does explain it a bit. Like, the material conditions of people are decreasing in this country. People that aren't supposed to be poor are now. Things are getting worse. Alienation of capitalism is increasing. And for me, I think that's a big driver of, you know, people out to fringe anything, right, left or right, is, you know, if you see like everything is things getting worse, and you know your life is supposed to be better and you can't figure out why, and then when you look for answers, you can either like realize, you know, you find answers that, oh, you know, if you can criticize the system, if for somehow you can break through the ideology, dominant ideology, and criticize the system, then you move to the left, however far that goes for you. But if you can't criticize, you know, if you can't break through that ideology and like the system is working, then you have to go blame something else, right? You have to blame the right. You know, you go to the right with your weird QAnon conspiracy theories or just straight up racism and fascism. So,
in an attempt to cram three of our topics into one segue, which would be our stock talk, our America has a crazy people issue, and this whole critical race theory. I was listening to Matt Kors today, of course, because I like to listen to my AMC, and he had a very intelligent stock person on there who was delusional, who kept referring to President Trump, meaning what she was saying, not a gaffe, who kept saying things like, oh, well, we all know who really won that day, we know what's coming later, and it was just incredible to see someone who was clearly beyond book smart, who is just so ingrained into the fact that they think Trump is still president that they would take every opportunity on a platform with, you know, 30,000 people watching to proclaim Trump is still the president, to proclaim that he won that day. It was just unbelievable. Have you guys run into people who are ardent who are steadfast that Trump won and he's president? Have you run into that in your actual lives yet? And if you have you met the challenge to say, well, no, he didn't. He's not. What are you talking about? Has anyone?
Well, this might be one of those closet things that we were kind of sort of talking about a little bit earlier, but you don't see these people out in the wild unless they're in a large group, maybe, you know, storming certain locations. But you see a lot of them online. Like we talk about one at the end of every podcast.
I mean, I'm aware that the Land Baron's one of those people, and we use her to sort of tune into that, but are they just getting brave in their proclamations to where they're actually looking for, you know, popular YouTubers to pop in and proclaim that Trump's president, and that's the reality that we live when it's not?
Well, I mean, from what Jared was saying earlier, you start to be disenfranchised by the system, so you kind of have to make a decision consciously or subconsciously where, you know, what's the problem here? Is it my fault? Is it capitalism's fault? Or is it the globalists? Or is it the Democrats? Or is it the, you know, abortionists or something? And, you know, people...
Wait, does it matter whose fault it is when you have to look at, say, you know, your aunt or your cousin or your brother and say, you're wrong? All of that stuff that you really believe is just fake. It's not true, and have to deal with the ramifications of that? Or you just let them have that insanity until they let it go or start a war? Like, I'm confused as to what the actual appropriate course of action is when you are dealing with a person who's living the alternate reality that Trump is still the president and he's going to be taking over again soon, etc.
I mean, it's going to be going case by case, but I mean, also you can look at it and just say, well, he's not, and I don't care what you think anymore, so you can go fuck off. Like,
true, but you know, saying that to your mom or grandma could be a little difficult.
Not for me.
Because I just know it's difficult to tell people you're wrong, and I think there's a point in time coming that, especially in the area in which we live, that we're going to have to look people square in the face and say, no, listen, you're wrong. Move into our reality now. I'm not saying that we need to convince them, but they do have to be reintroduced to actual reality at some point, or the country as a whole is going to have problems.
Wait, so, also the problem, though, Rob, is like, you say we have to reintroduce them to the reality, and the reality is the guy that won went up and to the world said, wouldn't it be just absolutely wild? Like, how crazy and wild would it be? Maybe you can do this after, Jacob, in your impression. Like, if America actually meddled in other countries' elections, what?
I mean, fair, everybody lies all the time about everything, so even if you look at them and you say, oh, you're wrong, I guess they would just say, well, I guess you're the liar.
Yeah, I mean, the abridged reality, and this is kind of bleeding in back into cognitive geez, cognitive critical race theory.
Well, yeah, that's all these are so tightly tied at the moment.
Sure, it has a lot to do with education and the way our education system is set up, and it is systemically racist, but it also is systemically capitalist.
I think the left and right can agree that we're systemically capitalist. That can be pretty well agreed upon on a bipartisan basis.
Right, but both of those parties love capitalism.
Well, no, that's fine. Just trying to establish my baseline of reality.
But John, I think that's a really good point, because I don't know. Sorry, I want to circle back real quick.
That's fine. This is a complex beginning topic here. It's like
we're just commenting on ignoring realities, and you know, it seems like both sides really want to do it. So anyway,
well, were you talking about like the just like we're, you know, systemically, you know, it's like capitalism is everywhere. And I feel like this, the article and like the examples that the right gives of critical race theory is not, it's the, what they talk about at the beginning, it's this Marxist, they want to overthrow the Constitution and America and everything like that. And then the examples he gives is like the FBI learning about intersectionality, or, you know, rich white dudes that make nukes had to write letters to fictitious women and people of color about how bad they are while they make bombs that indiscriminately kill women and people of color, you know, all over the world. Well, I guess nukes, though, we only did that once. Well, I guess those were people of color and women that the U.S. nuked. But it's this neoliberal commodification of critical race theory, right? It's just like, oh, we're going to have a seminar and we're going to check some boxes and you're going to feel bad about, and you can say, I'm an ally now, and now we know oppression is bad and we're not going to do it anymore because it's going to make our workplace more efficient and run better so we can make more money. And it even goes with, like, was it the CIA or was it the FBI that was, like, months ago had, like, this really woke campaign of, like, look at all these woke people that work for us while we help overthrow governments all over the world.
Oh, yeah, and now it seems like the play is, like, the anti-woke play. Being woke is the problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of been bastardized and taken on a lot of different meanings, just whoever's saying it, so...
But I mean, it's just the backlash, right? Because we had, like, there was the Me Too movement and all this sort of this movement to acknowledge oppression and racism. So they go about it in a way that makes no real change, right? At all. It just checks some boxes so they can say, you know, we're diverse and equitable. You know, we've done DEI stuff, and you know, we know about oppression, but it doesn't fundamentally change anything. And like the thing that the conservatives are mad about is not like actual critical race theory that John talks about it, but it's like the bastardization of that when it goes through this lens of capitalism that spits it back out in a way that is no longer a threat to capitalism and just creates a new market demographic for people.
That man, that's an incredibly interesting point, it filters itself through to make itself safe for the system it needs to exist within.
That's meta something. Shit right there. I can't wait to touch that in editing, because I'm gonna have to listen 8 or 9 times to figure out what the fuck you said.
Add a little reverb, you know, when I say that. Yeah,
that was some sort of something, Jared.
Yeah.
My mind hath blown.
Not all he blows.
Mine's dripping out my nose.
But yeah, sorry, I was just chomping at the bit to make that point. I'm sorry.
No, that was wonderful. That was excellent.
I mean, once again, you say more eloquently the things that I'm trying to, you know, very ham-fistedly spit out at people, so.
But I'm sorry, one more thing on this, and then I'll stop talking about it. But back to the email real quick. When he lists, like, by adhering to our principles, we ended slavery, we ended Jim Crow, and like, who the fuck did that? It was fucking socialists.
Sure was. I feel like critical race theory would teach that socialists did that, where current history does not.
Well, yes, I guess, yeah, leaked documents did realize, because as we saw earlier, Biden had like a terrorist list, and it was kind of vague of like, anarchists are very bad. Excuse me, terrorists, which, you know, anarchists is like the sort of dog whistle for anyone that's like an anti-capitalist.
Oh, I thought I was an anarchist for a hot minute, but I'm not.
You're evaluating it, so that's nice.
So you think we do need a transitory state before we get to communism?
How else do you get there? For real?
Wow.
Yeah. Via late stage capitalism.
That's an argument for another day, because I want to actually segue into another topic, Jared.
Yes, go ahead.
A building collapsed in Miami. Do you have any opinion of who may be living there and why before we dig into this topic at all?
Well, you just want him to guess?
Yes.
I honestly don't. I heard that it happened.
I'll give you one more fact. That building particularly has been sinking since the 80s and everybody knew it.
Oh, so it's poor people.
Oh, nail right on the head. Took one clue. Woo! Okay, one is confirmed dead and 99 still missing. There were 100 units and the building collapsed. It is just another illustration of America's failing infrastructure. From our bridges to our buildings, sea to shining sea, our shit's falling the fuck apart.
Hey, we built 3 miles of wall and Joe Biden's gonna keep building it.
It's gonna be the only structure fucking standing.
Well, it did get blown down, let's not forget, so.
You're fucking kidding me.
No, wind blew it down.
It's a super good wall.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, Republican Trump and Democratic Trump, they're both building it.
I actually am really, I don't intend to be laughing during this particular segment, but I find it absolutely horrifying that in our country, there was a building that sat for decades sinking into the ground that they just, people lived there probably because they had to, and it fell into the fucking earth. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I can make that anecdotal.
Please do.
We have that happening in our hometown. Jared and I and well, I guess, you know, a lot of us kind of live around the area. But we have portions of our town that every time it's a decently hard rain, they flood. Like basements totally underwater, cars, you know, a foot up, just totaling the cars that are in the flood. And it just happened recently. It happened a year ago. It happened 2 years before that. It keeps happening. The city somehow has enough money to put up new street lights on Main Street that don't actually broadcast light for cars. Like, they're not for safety. They're just for decoration. But there isn't enough money in any budget to make sure these houses don't flood. And also, now all these houses have to carry flood insurance, which is like another $5,000 a year. So the poor people that live there are now just more poor. You know, or their landlords are just making slightly less money, however you want to look at that. But no rich people live in the areas affected. You know, I literally see this happening at a, you know, kind of a smaller scale. People aren't dying from it, but, you know,
yet
same deal. And right, yet.
I bet there was more money for the police budget.
Yeah, you better believe it. Any other local examples of failing infrastructure?
I can share my own kind of example for that.
Giraffe, you're sticking your neck out. You ready for this?
I'm sticking my neck out. Listen,
go ahead.
My sister lives in a building. It's just a simple little apartment. It's right above a garage. Their house started to lean dramatically. And I mean dramatically. Like, the wall that used to stand at a straight angle, like with the ground, it was a right angle. Now it is leaning 15, 20 degrees. And this just happened over a couple of days. A strong gust of wind came and it pushed it another 5 degrees. Their landlord came over and he built a wooden frame and propped it up against the house. Mind you, it's not even like touching where the house itself is bending and the giant cracks in the wall are. And he was like, oh yeah, it'll be fine. It's perfectly fine. It's not gonna fall.
They use ground contact lumber for that too, right?
I'm sure.
They did not.
But so obviously she got out of there, but this house is still leaning further and further as time is going on. Another thankful thing is that there is nothing beside it where it's going to fall. It's an empty parking lot. The bar patrons park there, but
oh god, man.
Let's just say hopefully it falls at night whenever nobody's parked there.
Probably will at 1:30 when everyone's walking out the bar.
But yeah, nothing is being done about it whatsoever. It's just slowly tilting.
Are we just in a state of decay right now?
Hey, late stage capitalism, what are you gonna do?
Sinkholes everywhere. They happen all the time in this town, and I don't understand it. Just all the time. Inexplicable spots. Sinkholes.
Are they like the ones in Florida that are like everything's fine and then like your whole house just collapses instantly? Or are they ones that give warning like the leaning house?
No, they're just sinkholes that just happen suddenly in, like, a road. Just suddenly, there's a sinkhole that just happened. Why did it just happen? Not really sure. There's just a sinkhole now.
Heavy rains, nothing preceding?
We get heavy rain a lot. If it's not sunny, it's heavy raining. It's not really much of an in-between. I don't think we have a water table. Our water table is right at the surface.
So it's a problem that everyone should realize exists, and yet there's no infrastructure or plan in place to do anything about it whenever it becomes unmanageable.
Is there something that you can do? Or is there like sinkhole prevention techniques? I guess that's a Google there.
Well, not necessarily prevent them, but you could have a crew in place to fix them.
Because it takes weeks, weeks and weeks. For a while, it's nothing but cones and you know, caution tape.
I wonder what's going to come out with the history of that building and, you know, the residents there. Because I immediately thought of, I don't know if anyone else remembers the Grenfell fire a few years ago in the UK. It was this high-rise, low-income housing that caught on fire. Like, the whole thing burned down. A lot of people died. And, like, of course, everyone that lived there was homeless afterwards. They're like, at the time, how did this happen? What could we do, right? It turns out that you look into the history of the apartment building, and at, like, a few years before that, they had to, like, replace the whole facade, right, of the building. And, you know, there was, like, two types of materials they could use. The one type was a little more expensive, but it was flame retardant. And the other type just, you know, goes up like a box of matches, right? And so you can imagine which type of material the people living in the building wanted and actually suggested and, like, put the plan out, like, you know, we need this, that, like, the tenants of the building versus the person that what the owner ultimately chose. The people in the building wanted the better, higher quality material, and the landlord just was like, nah, I'm just putting in the cheap shit, because it was cheaper. And a bunch of people died. Because, I mean, who knows, right, how many years, like, maybe they were trying to get it fixed, and just, you know, the landlord wouldn't do it, the city wouldn't do it.
Don't we have similar with the Louisiana flooding years and years ago, where they were telling anybody that would listen that the levee was going to break and needed repaired, because they always do. And then, hey, it broke, and then a bunch of people lost their houses and died.
Are you sure? Because I distinctly remember a George W. saying, well, we thought we dodged a bullet.
I mean, was the bullet the levee that was falling apart? Thought we dodged that one?
Well, again, it's like, we had no idea this would happen.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
Which brings us to a topic that I don't know how to appropriately segue into. It's a sensitive subject for some. Some people are really into it. Some people aren't. I know Katie is into it. I know that Jacob is into it. But guys, I think we need to talk about freeing Brittany. It's time.
I think I will leave that to the experts.
See, I'm not heavily emotionally attached. I see it in the news all the time. So I just know it. I just know the things to a degree. And I find it interesting. I just find it all very interesting. So today,
what makes it interesting?
It's interesting because it's stuff that we really didn't know. Like, we always knew that things bothered her. We always knew that she had things going on that were bothering her, and that truly did drive her to madness in some cases. But we never really knew what it was. We were always just guessing, and sometimes people truly guessed the worst, but not in the ways that actually we see coming out and that she's actually sharing now. Now we know that the worst truly did happen in a lot of cases, in ways that kind of make us think, wow, we were assholes.
Oh, I feel like everyone's always like that to women in general, especially women in the spotlight. It's constantly like they turn 18. It's like, great, let's just talk about how much we want to fuck them. And then it's like, oh, I guess you're 25 now. Just leave.
I think people were even having those terrible thoughts, you know, before she was even, you know, 18, you know.
She made I'm a Slave for You when she was 17, I believe.
I mean, someone had a countdown to the Olsen twins' 18th birthday.
Oh yeah.
Like that, suddenly that they're just going to be able to fuck everybody.
It's been one of those things where I found it to be really interesting. You know, I've never really been totally emotionally invested, but now it's like I'm very intrigued at seeing what's going on, and I guess to a degree maybe emotionally invested, because seeing that sort of pain and seeing that sort of tragedy, you know, makes me really sympathetic.
Yes. Well, I know I watched the New York Times, the framing Britney Spears thing. Did you watch that with me, Jared?
Yes.
That, brought up a lot of interesting stuff. It basically suggested the whole reason she entered into the conservatorship was because she was pressured into it so she could keep custody or visitation of her children. So they basically used her children as pawns against her so she could keep seeing them. And now she's been stuck in this situation for over 10 years.
Well, let's provide a little more framework about what is actually happening to her.
Yeah.
So we got news on the conservatorship today, and we should define conservatorship, I guess. So first off, conservatorship is a legal concept whereby a court appoints a person to manage an incapacitated person or minor's financial and personal affairs. The conservator's duties include overseeing finances, establishing and monitoring the physical care of the conservatee or ward, and managing living arrangements.
Well, so then how did that happen to Brittany?
She voluntarily signed into it to keep custody or visitation of her kids. It's from my understanding from that New York Times framing Brittany thing. It was they used her kids as a pawn against her.
And the they is like a her team dad. Of people. I know her. Yeah, I know her dad is involved. I'm not sure exactly how.
And whoever he hires. Because the court just appointed it. The dad was like, I want to do this. And they're like, cool, great.
Well, the father is the conservator, right?
He stepped down. It's someone else now. But the new person's just like a bank.
I thought it was a nurse or a healthcare provider.
Mm-mm. It's just like a manager. It's like a financial manager or something. It was the same person that was still on the father's team.
Like, literally, capitalism has enslaved Britney? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, her father has.
But through a bank?
Sort of. People that she hired, because technically it's still all her money, he just has it to spend, and she doesn't. So, you know, it's her money that he just gets to spend on all this stuff used against her.
Yeah, so, and she's been essentially trapped in this for how long?
Over a decade.
And, you know, we did see some rough patches, but as you kind of touched on earlier, people just make assumptions about rough patches. And, you know, we have her, you know, famous moments, and, you know, looking through it, through this lens at those moments become a little differently colored, I think, or it seems.
I mean, you know, I get your commentary on society, like, you know, it colors it different now, but why wouldn't it
Well, someone's going crazy because they got their kids taken from them, or they got, you know, their kids were used as pawns to steal all their money. It's not because they were like high on drugs. You know, there's different reasons people do things, but we love to assume the worst of everyone, especially women.
That's true. Yeah. They just wanted her to be a party girl. That's all they got photos of.
Right.
That's the narrative that they wanted to tell, so they told it.
Right.
Because that's what made the money.
What sells them magazines gets them
that's
clicks.
True. You got those beaver shots and you're fucking set.
Even the Young Turks was into that back in the day.
Yeah, you just take a photo of a woman as she's getting out of a car so you can just post her vagina up. But it's really just a problem with her, not the people taking the photos.
But what's very interesting about that is the person that took the picture and published the picture has no, you know, they did nothing wrong, legally speaking.
Yeah.
She's in public. She displayed it, technically. It might be slimy, it might be awful, but it's not illegal.
Yeah, that's a lot of a whole nother question. Like, why are paparazzi still allowed to be legal? How are we still allowing this just legal stalking of famous women, famous people?
Yeah. There's a lot of things to talk about within this. So
because if people weren't obsessed with celebrity, that might give them more time to think about why capitalism is bad.
That's true. My parents watch Entertainment Tonight every fucking night.
Oh.
And then they follow it up with a show that's a different name but the same show.
Talk Soup.
That's a boomer thing, though. Are we seeing draft in like your generation? Is it still like follow a celebrity? Because like in the quote kids nowadays, they seem to just pick a YouTuber and run with a new one every month or two. from what I've seen the kids with the tablets doing.
I feel like my generation just kind of doesn't care. Well, some of them. A lot of them are just focusing on their own lives. Most of us don't have time to follow in the steps of a celebrity because we're struggling working three jobs. The kids below us, like even my little brother, for example, he is 16. I always hear him quoting YouTubers or the celebrity saying this.
I found the conservator since 2019, Jody Montgomery, a professional appointed by the court, has acted as temporary conservator for Britney Spears' personal matters. So up until 2019, it's been her dad.
Also, the judge that signed off on the conservatorship is the one that appointed Britney Spears' lawyer. She is not allowed to hire her own lawyer. Which sounds like some sort of weird, like, safety shit to me.
That sounds a lot like Kafka's trial.
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's just, you know, a person that's fucked by the system.
Well, yeah, okay.
There's my input, so back to Britney.
She also is currently forced to have an IUD inserted into her.
That's really super fucked up. It's so fucked up.
It is. What did someone call it? Reproductive coercion? I called it a step lower than forced sterilization.
That's a fucking crime. It sounds like a crime that is legally done to an individual in our country who has no rights, is what it sounds like to me.
I don't know if she had it inserted by her own thing, but they don't last decades. They only last, so I don't know if she was like forced to have it in, but they aren't letting her get it out for some reason, which I don't know. She could probably just rip it out herself if she but
horrifying. Listeners, do not rip out your own
no IUD. Dude, please see a doctor if you're allowed. Please see a doctor. I'll pay for you to go see a doctor. Just hit me up
if you're allowed. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, so Britney is at this moment or at this juncture kind of attempting to take the steps to at least as much as she can to free herself from this. So yes. Is there
in court today with the same lawyer who never told her that she could petition to remove the conservatorship. So now that lawyer who never told her that she could get rid of the conservatorship is helping her to get rid of the conservatorship. And
seems like because it got so much press.
Technically, because he is still her lawyer and he legally does have to do what he requests her to do. He just conveniently never told her that she could petition to have that removed.
Well, yeah, because I bet if she got it removed, she could get a different lawyer.
Yeah.
Right? So and he kind of makes some serious money from that.
Oh, I'm sure. Fuck.
Yeah, it sounds like everyone in this situation is making money off of it, you know? She, like, and all this stuff, like, I feel like they're just gonna keep letting it go until it bankrupts her. Like, she has to pay all of her father's lawyer's expenses, you know, and then she gets stuck with the court-appointed whoever.
Yeah, this new conservator who obviously has not done anything different. It was through COVID. I mean, what was this person gonna do? Change the whole system? Probably like, do whatever it was you were doing. I'm just, you know, a stand-in.
Yeah, her dad stepped down and this woman stepped up. It probably wasn't like a whole thing, but, you know. She was like, okay, I'll go away for a bit. You take over.
I feel terribly bad for Britney. I think that whole situation, she's had no rights mostly her entire life. She's been told what to do, and the first time she said, no, I'm not doing that, she was legally bullied into a way for her to have to do what she was told. And here she is, a nearly 40-year-old woman, still being told what to do with no rights, even over her own reproductive system. And the fact that that even happens in this country makes me think we need a new American legacy more than ever.
That only happens in terrorist countries, right?
Who else is just very worried for the future of women?
She's a prime example of what can happen whenever your own money is working against you.
It's true. Is this unprecedented? Has this ever happened before? Where's Matthew?
I feel like it's probably happened before to plenty of women that have far less means, and things are just so much worse for them.
I feel like she was the prototype. That's what I think. I think she was a prototype.
Wow.
Well, for the experts involved, have we done Brittany justice?
No.
As much as we can.
Shoo-do.
Shoo-do. Katie just yelled shoo-do. Just use that.
Katie started with shoo-do. Katie, do you want to tell the listeners what shoo-do is?
Oh, it's just that we had shoe brew and then we had Mountain Dew. And it just all got churned in our tummies.
I think that the first time that the Anal Podcast has gathered together in real life since its conception deserves a little more introduction than that.
Well, somebody should say that then.
I did. I took care of it.
Well, there you go. Then we're done.
We went to Shoe Brew and it was really interesting because it was the first time I personally have been in a completely full restaurant maskless and didn't have a heart attack.
Well, yeah, especially because you had the barrier was right beside you, so.
Well, that wasn't what that was. That was just decoration.
But yes, Shoe Brew is an interesting place where we did trivia. And what place did we get?
Second.
We got second place. The trip was how many miles? 900? 2100? I'm not sure how. How far did Mike come to go there?
Oh. I don't know. More than... inside joke. More than 700.
More than 700 miles southwest of Norfolk.
Norfolk.
So I definitely think that Shoe Brew was a good time, but I may edit all that out so Jared don't get doxxed because I can already feel him sweating.
It is hot today.
Shoe tasting, if no one has any other Shoe Brew input other than we were in a room full of maskless people.
It was fine. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. There wasn't that many people there.
Yeah, it was also not... I mean, I guess it's kind of good that places aren't being super packed. Because
Wednesday night.
I mean, that place, though, I mean, before, like before the pandemic, because they moved to that bigger location, like a little, I don't know, was it a year before the pandemic? Yeah, we were there for the opening, yeah. Before the pandemic, I'd go there on a weeknight, just like, I want to pick up a beer, you know, like they release a new beer or something. And I would just be packed for dinner. But it's a sign that people are still taking their time a bit. I mean, because again, the only reason we even went out was it was like a special occasion. You know, that's not going to be like, oh, let's go out to dinner once a week. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Well, on price alone, understandable.
Yeah.
More importantly, John, are you ready for your critical Mountain Dew breakdown?
I'm ready. You got the list of all of them, and do you remember where I ranked them? Because I don't.
I have the picture, and they're in line in your ranking, I do believe.
Perfect.
John, you want to set the scene for our listeners?
I've been aging some Mountain Dew in my refrigerator for just a moment like this. Jared loves Mountain Dew. So I know whenever I go to Jared's house, I need to bring several different flavors of Mountain Dew to him to try, because he loves them so. So we had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Five different varieties of...
Five colors!
Dating back, the oldest one was from Christmas of 2020. I hope that was 2020. and then some other abnormal Mountain Dew flavors. Yeah, what do you want from me now? What do you want?
Well, nothing now. I'll go ahead and give them. The abnormal flavors were Mountain Dew SA, which is a mix of Code Red, Voltage, and Whiteout.
Sure.
We'll go with that. The second one was what we affectionately called Christmas Dew, which was a lovely mix of pomegranate and cranberry. That was Mike's favorite. The next on the list was Mountain Dew Baja Blast Fruit Punch. It was orange. We also had Major Melon. Listen, I don't recommend that one unless you like getting kicked in the face by watermelon. It's aggressive. And then my favorite, the Baja Blast, flash. A little bit of pineapple coconut in there. Imagine you have banana boat suntan lotion. You're rubbing it on. It smells lovely. Now spray it in your mouth, Mountain Dew. It's so good.
I mean, that's a very accurate depiction of the... I'm just going to call it the yellow one. But I thought... I don't think my rankings were very similar to yours. If memory serves, which I don't think it will very well, I think I took a good picture of them. But I had the Christmas one on top, just because it was the most adult flavored one. Like it actually tasted of something, and that was the pomegranate and cranberry coming through, more tart than just the taste of sugar. I have no idea what
I'm similar. Like gun to my head, you have to drink another Mountain Dew. I guess I drink of those. I guess I would drink the Christmas, but oh god, they're just. I mean, it's because the Christmas tasted like something and the watermelon tasted like something, and it tricked me last night because I was like, oh, there's a watermelon flavor. Maybe that's okay. And then today it was, oh no, it was not okay. Like the Dusa and the orange one, it's just chemicals. It doesn't taste like anything. It's too many flavors just mashed together ugh.
And Jacob, just for the record, it was mostly red and yellow dye. In all of them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's truly what we recommended last time.
In an instance previous to this, we had done another Mountain Dew tasting, which had Liberty Brew, a pink lemonade from a gas station. It was a special gas station one. But the pink lemonade one was, I thought, was pretty good.
It truly does sound delicious.
Well, it didn't taste like Mountain Dew, I think, which is why it was good.
I think the best thing that came out of the Mountain Dew tasting was after the first one, and we were just sitting around watching YouTube videos on the TV, was discovering Badlands Chugs.
I thought you were talking about this one when John just started mixing them all with vodka.
Oh yeah. This time
yeah,
I tried...
Yeah, can we talk about that, please?
I tried to salvage them by mixing them with vodka, and nothing could save them.
The watermelon lime would have been good. You just didn't try it.
No, I don't really like watermelon.
If watermelon and mustard taste okay together, watermelon and lime would have been perfect.
Mustard and lime, they're pretty much the same thing. Oh, speaking of watermelon, new topic that I just remembered. Did anybody read the article about the, I think, singular IKEA store that put out a Juneteenth menu for their black employees, and it consisted of, like, watermelon and fried chicken?
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, is that actively racist or just a terrible backfire?
Well, I mean,
inherently racist?
It's inherently racist. I think it's showing what critical race theory could help, because had they been taught certain things about slavery, they would know that watermelon was fed to slaves because it was cheap. And, you know, that's how that all comes about. Just a little aside there. So, I mean, the management said we were wrong. That was wrong of us. And like, there weren't any black people that helped make this decision at all.
What a shock.
Yeah. Shocking. Or, you know, people of color, I guess. Yeah, but regardless, that's just so how out of touch, like they could have been well-meaning with this, and just like, I don't know how you missed the mark that badly, but some people are just dumb, so maybe, I don't know.
I just, first off, like, did they have to buy this food that was on the menu, or was it just given to them?
Yeah, I don't know. They might have had, like, the store budget to get, like, special meals throughout the year for something. Who knows?
I want to know which one it would be more insulting.
Yeah.
Having to buy it or just having it given to you. Which one is more insulting? Jesus.
Oh, you meant the employees having to buy the meal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One is worse?
That's a tough question to answer.
Right, because if you had to buy it, you could choose to not buy it.
Yeah. And then it's like, well, then did they hire black people to help make these decisions? Or it's just like, oh, we didn't have any black people. Just letting you know.
And they just give it to you and they're like, hey, we got you something. Happy Freedom Day, guys.
You're still at work, though.
About 20 minutes.
Oh, God.
No, that's a great biting criticism of that, because, I mean, especially now it's going to be a federal holiday, and it's like it's been a holiday, I guess, in our state for a couple years, but only now that, you know, after there's been, like, the huge mass movement after the George Floyd murder. They're like, oh, well, maybe we should actually make this a day off for people. But who's going to get the day off, right? It's going to be, you know, middle class off white office workers mainly, right? Like, that's who's going to get the day off. And, like, poor people of color who the holiday is supposed to be for, because they're poor and are, you know, working worse jobs, probably will have to work. It's just so disgusting. God damn.
It'll be interesting to see, like, what companies start going with that, too, because not all companies have to do federal holidays, right?
Right.
It'll be interesting to see what, yeah. I mean,
they have to pay for it.
Wasn't there a tweet a couple years ago from Elon Musk about, like, he's like, oh, we celebrate Juneteenth, and then someone replied, it was like, oh, well, that's really nice, you give your workers a day off. And he's like, oh, well, they have to take a day off. They have to take time off. From their
oh
lead.
My god.
Amazing.
A wise man once told me that it ain't a real holiday until it can be commercialized. So now that Juneteenth is a federally recognized holiday, I feel in my bones like you'll have your 4th of July gear, your Cinco de Mayo set up, your Juneteenth get up, and it will be commercialized. And once it can be commercialized, then it's real. Once capitalism can get its claws in it, then
well, yeah,
it's real.
When are the Juneteenth sales?
Well, yeah, that's the what.
That's what I want to know.
That what will capitalism do to Juneteenth now that it is a federal holiday? And I guess that
when
was my little.
When can I save money
forward.
On cheaply made items?
Well, I was going to say that this just came up. I don't know if I guess this might be a depressing thing, but did somebody else watch the Bo Burmans?
Oh.
Yep.
You want to give us a little breakdown for our final thought of the episode?
Oh man. Oh, that moment. I was like, who are you? But I kind of got what he was going for there. But I was like, who is you to be so high and mighty? But no, I was like, I knew what he was going for there. But no, it definitely did feel like what would happen to somebody if they were all alone for so much time by themselves. If you're like basically catching cabin fever while you're working on a project, and you know that the only thing that might be saving your sanity at all is that project. And by finishing that project, you might just completely turn to mush. Like, you have no idea what might happen to you. Like, that was really neat. It was an interesting critique of what comedy should be in 2020. Because I think he took a look at that to ask himself and to kind of ask outside as well, like, what is comedy's place in 2020, as he probably did notice that other comedians were doing just, you know, live Facebook shows, or they were doing just live internet shows for comedy. But can you really do comedy like that if you aren't hearing laughs? It's art. It is really art.
Would you describe it as an experience? Because that's what I've heard.
It is an experience. You have to experience art.
Fair enough. I will have to be checking that out someday. Not yet, though. Not yet. Why don't you guys go ahead and sign off while I type a command?
Bye, everybody.
Good night. I've been John, and special shout out to Carl Nassib, who did big things this week.
Okay, bye-bye now.
This has been Jacob, and congratulations, Brooklyn.
You gonna stick your neck out here, Draft? Draft. He must have his neck in another room.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Anal Pod. Join us again next week as we break down what's going on in the world around us and what the hottest topic in the news is of the day. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review wherever you found the podcast. That's how we get noticed, and we love to get noticed. And for anyone interested in that secret raffle, you only have just a few more days to get your email in with the word woo for entry. And as always, listener, don't forget to do your best to stay safe out there.